Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'm happy now to welcome back to the cafe Diane Karp. She's executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, and Shayla Patton, who's director of education and outreach there. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Good morning, Santa Fe.
Hello. Thank you for having us on today.
You're welcome. It's good to have you back. We haven't had the Santa Fe Art Institute on for a while, and what we're doing today is talking to people who are doing great work in Santa Fe and often flying under the radar. So what's going on at the Institute?
Well, there are lots of things going on at the Santa Fe Art Institute. This summer, we put together a really wonderful house tour of amazing architecture in Santa Fe that has spectacular art collections, and there are five of them. Unfortunately, two of them are already over, but on July 27th, the beautiful home of Mickey and Jeannie Klein that's perched up there above the Bishop's Lodge area, and their spectacular exhibition will be available to the public, and the idea is to raise funds for our remarkable youth education and outreach programs, which Shayla's going to talk about. So if anybody is interested in that, they can call the Art Institute, 424-5050. In a little bit later in July, on Thursday, July 28th, we have our open studios when all of the amazing artists and writers in residence are available to talk to the general community and read some of their work and show some of their art in studio, and that's always an amazing evening. So anyone who wants to come, it's from 5:30 to 7, and we usually have something to eat afterwards, so you can also sit and eat with the artists and writers.
And it's always really tasty, if I may add.
Oh, well, thank you. That's because I do the cooking, but I love cooking and I love having company, and the artists and writers just think it's fabulous to have the time. Otherwise, they're just busy working on their projects. On Friday night, the 29th of July, our visiting artists, Brooke Singer and Ricardo Miranda Zuniga, will be talking about their work. They have a wonderful project. Brooke Singer's project is called The Counter Kitchen. And the two artists, working across media and disciplines, create all kinds of platforms for local knowledge to connect and inform people about art and the ways in which art can explain things about the big world that are sometimes very complex and invisible.
Like what?
Well, like the kinds of foods that you have in your kitchens and what
genetic... Oh, I heard about this. We're going to have them on the air.
Right, what genetic engineering really is and how that affects us and the world around us. So they have a wonderful talk that they're going to be giving on Friday night, the 29th, and then Saturday and Sunday at the Art Institute. We're doing one of our wonderful community workshops, and it's a rotoscoping workshop that'll be taking
place. Explain to people what, because that's sort of an old-fashioned thing by now.
Yes.
Explain what rotoscoping is.
Rotoscoping is you take a drawing and you change it subtly, bit by bit by bit, and then you put it in this large circular wheel. This is the traditional way, but they do it digitally, in a large circular wheel with sort of slits made in the outside, and the inside is the image and the outside is where you stand, and you spin the rotoscope, and as you spin it makes a moving image.
Right.
And so that was the traditional beginning.
It's an old-fashioned animation.
Right, it's a 19th century animation technique. It's actually, I think, older than 19th century. I think it was back to the 16th century in its origins, but it would be a sort of party activity, and artists would draw, you know, men jumping off of objects into water, objects bouncing or flying. And that was the sort of prototypical moving image. And now Ricardo and Brooke are going to offer a digital app that will take physical motion, your actual movement, and translate it into a rotoscoped image in a digital format. It's pretty fabulous. So that's open to the public, and anyone who's interested can also call 424-5050 to get all of that information.
Another way that rotoscoping is done is, at least in the old days, and I think movies like 101 Dalmatians were done this way, they would project a film onto a screen, and then you would draw, you would literally trace the image.
Yes.
Frame by frame.
Yes.
And so you would make something that was clearly hand-drawn, but that was
digitally supported.
Action of the live image.
Exactly. And the wonderful thing about Ricardo and Brooke's rotoscoping workshop is that it actually comes from human motion. So you'll be standing against a blue screen wall and making a motion that you would like then to turn into a film, and they will be instructing how that is done. And it doesn't take wildly sophisticated software. I think it's the kind of thing that like a parent and a child might really enjoy doing, as well as practiced artists. So it's adding to your repertoire of things that you can do to be creative. And the last thing that I wanted to talk about is, in August, we have invited a wonderful arts writer named Robert Atkins, who's coming to us from California. And he's going to be doing a workshop that is 3 weekday evenings and 2 Saturday afternoons, and it's called Writing for Artists. And it's about artists who either don't like the way writers write about their work, or don't feel satisfied with the quality of their artist statement, or, you know, just are unhappy about how they have to describe their work when they're asked about it. And so it's really at a workshop to have you enhance and perfect the ways in which you describe who you are and what you do as an artist. So you could be a writer, you could be a performer, you could be a visual artist. Any of those qualities and disciplines are welcome in this workshop. And that's what's up for the rest of July and early August.
That's all, huh?
That's all. And then the end of August, we're having T. Allen Kamp, who's going to come, and he's going to direct a workshop, a 2-day workshop with the Watershed Association and the Rail Yard Association, using Vista volunteers and AmeriCorps volunteers. We're inviting the whole community to come and explore the Santa Fe watershed and the Santa Fe River, something we've been devoted to for 10 years now, to see if we can creatively, collectively, come up with some new ideas of how we engage with issues of water in Santa Fe.
It's about time.
It's about, we keep working at it.
I know.
We keep working at
it. I mean, I'm not saying you've been at it forever, but it's about time that we come together as a community, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Need not mention fire and drought.
Well, I think the fire and the drought are adding to that immeasurably, and we are going to have to get very serious and less sort of disinterested and disconnected to the issues of water in our environment.
Very true. So, Shayla Patton, you are Director of Education and Outreach at the Santa Fe Art Institute, and you've got some programs going on for young people this summer that are still open if people want to come and sign up and so on.
Yes, we sure do. We're very excited about our summer programs, and starting Monday, July 18th, for teenagers, we're partnering with Youth Media Project, and we're doing a 2-week workshop in collaboration with them.
And they're going to be here in a couple of minutes.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's great, and I'm sure they're going to talk about this workshop as well, because we're excited about working together, but also providing the opportunity for teenagers to record their personal histories, to learn how to DJ. They'll have a chance to go into the studio and also to work with visual art. So the goal is at the end of the 2 weeks that they'll create their own project, and they'll go into the studio and they'll record it, and they can have a visual arts component to it, and then they'll have a recorded component to it, and they'll put them together and show them on the last day of the workshop. That's for ages 12 to 18. And we're going from 9:30 to 4:30 for the next 2 weeks. Now, if there is someone who's interested, you can take it for 1 week, but the first week is going to be the preparation. So we'll be doing the spoken word poetry. We'll be doing some photography and a little bit of music and DJing. And the next week will be the part where we put it all together in the studio.
Right.
So it's kind of important to do both weeks, but there's still ways for people to participate. And we also offer scholarships for teens who may not be able to afford the cost of the workshop, because it's very important to the Santa Fe Art Institute and for the Youth Media Project to have students participate and have the opportunity to have access to the arts where otherwise they may not have. So we're really excited about that. And at the same time as that that's running, we have a summer camp for the young people ages 6 to 12 as well. So while the teenagers are working on the youth media project, next week we're going to be working on the Move Your Body Week, which is going to have African dance and drumming, some creative
movement. Now, are you
doing
that? You're an African drummer and dancer.
Yes, I am an African dancer, and I will be teaching the African dance for next week, and I'll have a drummer come and help teach with the kids and actually play for the performance that we'll have on the Friday. So it's a lot of fun, and we actually still have some spaces available for the ages 6 to 12 for the movement workshop as well. And the kids are actually very excited about it. This is the fifth week of camp this week, and this week we're doing recycled art. So they're doing all kinds of projects, and they're very excited about them. And the great thing is that at the end of each week, they're able to show the work to their parents and friends. So we invite them to come at 4 o'clock, and they can see what we've been up to for the week, and we set up an art show for them. Last week we were doing drama, so we did a play for the parents, and it was just very exciting. And we're excited just about having young people involved in arts programs, you know.
As we've talked about endlessly, the arts are always being cut in the public schools and things like that. So I imagine that some of these kids really haven't had a whole lot of art education in the first place.
They haven't. And they are learning a lot and given the opportunity to, one, to learn more about art, but also to explore that area of life. And it kind of opens doors in all kinds of ways for some of the young people. And you see, I've seen throughout the weeks with some of the young people how they have just opened up as people because they have a place to create and find themselves and ways to express. There's some kids who, with the drama, have really just perked up and been able to communicate through that. And then there's some kids with the drawing and with the poetry components, and they're able to use their words and just paint it out. And it's beautiful to see, and I'm just happy that we have the programs available. So if you're out there listening and you have young people, please call us at 424-5050 and take advantage of it. And you can also send me an email, and my email is spatton@sfai.org. And also on our education and outreach tab on our page, we have the registration forms and further information about the workshops that we're offering. And these summer workshops are in addition to the regular programs that we have going on. So not only do we have a summer camp for the young people and the teenagers, at the same time, we have our graffiti mentorship workshop on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4:30 to 6:30 that our teaching artist Guadalupe Vargas runs throughout the year. And we continue it during the summer because we don't want to stop any of our regular programs because the kids are used to coming. So we add in the programs and kind of fuse our young people so they can go to, they can take art all day, or they can do a drama workshop, and then they can go to a graffiti class in the afternoons and work on one of the mural projects that we have going on. Right now we're working with a teen center in Santa Fe to create a mural like back on Camino Olire off of the river path. And we have 40 walls over a period of two or three summers that we're going to be working on. So we have their young people and some of our young people who are working together from the start of the project to see what we want to put on the mural. So from conception to completion, the kids are involved in the process, and it's just great that they're excited about it, and they have a chance to get out there painting. So instead of getting into trouble, being out tagging on walls that are illegal, the kids have murals to create, and they have something that they can be proud of creating and something to show for it, because it will stand and be on the wall for people to see. So that's very exciting.
And you learn how to do weatherproof art.
Exactly. You learn how to do weatherproof art, and, you know, not only are they doing lettering, they're, you know, creating characters and, you know, naturescapes and different things like that. So it's all a part of the process. So when they walk away from the experience, they have something to take with them. They have a skill that they can use in other places as well.
And one of the things that's really wonderful to watch is that it's a community builder. Oftentimes these kids think that art is made in isolation. And sometimes it is, but they learn to work as part of a team, and they learn that their skill set really helps the team do a better job, so that they not only create their own stories and their own images, but they work together to create something larger. And the end result is that they hear each other's stories and they see each other's work, and it creates a kind of comprehension and understanding among them that is extraordinary, especially in this day and age when isolation and separation seems to be a kind of dominant theme.
Mm-hmm. And it also gives their work value. And a couple of weeks ago when we were doing the collage week, and it just happened to be the start of the fire, the kids were really concerned, and we sat in our morning circle and we talked, and they were like, well, I hate that fire, so this little six-year-old said. And I said, yeah, so what do we want to do? And we created projects. And a lot of times, you know, art comes in response to the issues that are happening in the world. And the kids sometimes don't have a voice in that. So it was great to give them an opportunity to say what they wanted to about it. And then we created these really neat collages that had the fire and water coming out of them. And it just showed that the kids have a strong voice.
I think it's really important that sense of engagement that you're talking about, and that sense of empowerment that people get through doing art. A while ago, we had on some young people from the Indian School poetry team, and one of them said, and I'm not going to be able to quote this exactly, but she said, if I hadn't started taking the poetry team class and getting involved in this team, I would just be another lost half-breed, half-white, half-Navajo kid going off into the world, not really knowing who I was or what I was doing. But having done this, I have such a sense of myself and what I can do. And that is, I think, something that getting engaged in art projects of all different kinds can do. And especially, some kid is going to find herself or himself drawing. Another kid is going to find himself in drama, and yet another one in dance. And so having that opportunity to even know where your little self wants to start evolving, you know, they don't have the chance to do that if these programs don't exist.
Right. And the other thing that happens is that because we're a pretty striated society, and, you know, some kids go to private school and some kids go to public school and some kids don't show up at school very often at all, the arts really are one of those playing fields where you've got a good idea, everybody's in admiration of it, and you don't have to be well-educated or wealthy or well-connected. It's the talent that really begins to show, and the voice is a powerful one. So not only do these kids get to sort of share their ideas, they share it with people they might not brush up against in an everyday world, and they get a lot of respect for what they do and how they do it.
Yeah, and a lot of times that's what they're looking for. One of the programs that we've recently started is a collaboration with the Youth Probation Department. We've done a lot of work during the year with the juvenile justice, but now we have a workshop just for some of the kids on probation. So they come to the Art Institute just for an art and poetry workshop. And it's been great just working with these young people and giving them a chance to have a voice for something positive. We don't know, you know, any of those situations. We just create the atmosphere that is creative. And 2 weeks ago, we gave them a sheet just to see, what is it that you want to get from this workshop? What do you want to learn? They want to learn art. They want to learn poetry. And they want to be productive and find things, but they need to have the opportunity and things in front of them that they can take advantage of, no matter, you know, what the cost. You know, they can come to the workshop, express themselves, learn a skill, and have something to walk away that they can feel proud of. You know, they created some paintings last week and the week before, and they're really proud, and it's great to have the kids have something right in front of them that they can show, hey, look at this. So it's amazing.
Yeah, one of the things that often happens in our society is that we see the arts as something that's like an add-on.
Yeah, a sort of decoration.
Decorative, mm-hmm. Exactly. And oftentimes the kids who have trouble, who get into trouble, who have very complex histories and backgrounds, who are usually pretty insecure, are denied access to the arts. And this is one of those places where you can't get it wrong. You know, if you're willing to be honest and you want to express something, it's amazing how powerful it is. And these kids get it immediately. It's so obvious.
It's the adults who take a while, huh?
Yes, yes. Some of us longer than others, I'm afraid.
We're talking to Diane Karp and Shayla Patton of the Santa Fe Art Institute. Do you have ever kids coming back summer after summer. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not only do we have kids that come back summer after summer, but we have kids that we work with all year, and they are so disconsolate that the school year is over because they no longer have the arts programs. So our commitment has always been to provide arts for the entire community, not just for the young kids and for the teens, but for the entire community year-round, so that summertime, when a lot of these kids don't have school, they have something productive to do. And we provide lunches for kids who don't bring their lunch. We have very healthy snacks.
Right, and then they have a chance to come back whenever, you know, for the actual programs. And then we also have a youth education studio. So if there is a time, an afternoon, where there are some young people who don't have school and they want to come and create a project, we are there for them to do that. So it's not always just a formal workshop. We have the studio there for the purpose of young people creating their own artwork. So a lot of times we'll have the teenagers come in during the day, and they'll come and they'll make a project, and they'll go, and it's available for the young people as well. So
Santa Fe Art Institute, a true community organization. Shayla Patton and Diane Karp, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm happy now to welcome back to the show Alina Scheim. She is Executive Director of Impact Personal Safety right here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
So just as I said before, we're checking in with some organizations that are doing wonderful work here in Santa Fe, and just to find out what they're up to these days. What is Impact Personal Safety all about?
Impact Personal Safety is a nonprofit that empowers children and adults by teaching them to prevent and defend themselves against verbal, physical, and sexual violence.
And so you do that by teaching them not only to fight, and there's some kind of martial arts component to it, which when I did it was scary but quite useful, or maybe will be useful someday, but also just that kind of learning the personal quality of standing your ground and not letting anybody mess with you.
Yes, we do both of those aspects of awareness, verbal, and physical skills for that moment and to avoid that moment. We also do social change aspects in our classes that we do, primarily in the schools, examining the roots of violence so that we can really acknowledge where violence comes from so that we don't even get to that moment. So we kind of have two different paths that we get to. We have the personal, and then we have the community change.
Tell us more about the community aspect. What is it that you're teaching in the schools?
One of our classes is called The Roots of Violence, and in that class we look at the relationship between the violence that we see in the community and what we call the roots of violence, which include racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, classism, etc., and really look at the spectrum of violence from these low-level jokes and comments to where it turns into an assault and maybe even death, and at its most extreme, genocide.
Right.
And so in our classes, what's really great is we have the opportunity to help students see across those topics so that they're not just thinking, well, I have it the worst and I have it the worst and we shouldn't help each other. You know, it's an opportunity for them to go, oh, it's a part of an entire system that if I'm doing this, it's because it's relating to these other things. So what's great about it, I'm sure you remember Matthew Shepard from several years ago, who was a gay man who was beaten to death in Wyoming. One of the interviews that they did with his assailants that they then turned into a play, they asked the assailant, well, why did you do this? Do you regret it? And he said, well, I was just doing what everyone else wanted to do. Everyone else was calling him a fruitcake and a fag. And, you know, I just did what they wanted to do. And obviously, most people wouldn't take it to the extreme, but there are people in our communities, for whatever reasons, mental issues or a history of abuse, etc., that will take it to that extreme. And so we use that story and others like it oftentimes in this class to help people realize, you know, it may sound like just a joke to you, but it creates an atmosphere in which violence in its extreme is okay to someone.
And I think we're not used to seeing the connection between a racial slur and what some people might even consider a joke and a murder, mm-hmm. and then between a murder and genocide. Mm-hmm. But if you think of those things all as a part of a continuum, mm-hmm. it changes your picture.
Right. And what's really important about that is that, you know, some of the examples that I give in classes, you know, if a student, if a woman was raped and you had never heard the term slut, you had never heard the term bitch, what would our community do if one of their daughters, one of their sisters was raped? It wouldn't be everyday business. People would be pounding on the doors of the police station saying, we demand justice. The same thing is true, you know, if you look at a janitor who works at the schools, if somebody talked to that person, if they got to know them, you know, if they cross that divide that we frequently have in social classes to find out, oh, and this person doesn't have insurance, which means that he hasn't found out that he has a heart problem, which means that when he has a heart attack, not only can he not may it make him go bankrupt, but it also is going to make it so that he doesn't even find out about it preventatively. You know, these are the kinds of things that people in our communities are having to deal with, that because of these divides, we don't actually realize that they need to be addressed.
Have you ever had the situation when you were in a class teaching this work and people from two supposedly different groups had the light bulb go off where they realized that they weren't or shouldn't be separated as they are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. And that's really exciting, especially with teenagers. You know, teenagers get very, you know, into very discrete factions and groups around these issues. And what's really exciting for me is when an immigrant student or a student from an immigrant family gets to realize what they're going through is exactly the same thing that a teenage girl's going through.
Right.
And seeing that connection and going, oh, it's not about, you know, it's that piece of the pie thing. Winona LaDuke has a great quote of about not wanting a bigger piece of the pie, she wants a different pie altogether.
That's nice. And
it's exactly that. It's helping students realize that, you know, when they're playing out these little acts of violence through bullying or through exclusion, things like that, that they're, you know, they're getting pegged as these problem kids. I love working with kids that are having a hard time myself. And they're getting pegged as these problem kids, and that's what they're starting to absorb, instead of realizing that they're actually a part of this bigger system that they're only playing out a role in. And if they can find the vocabulary to figure out that they're playing out a role and continuing the cycle of violence, you should see these kids when they find out that they're doing the same thing to someone else that someone did to them in another way. You know, they want to change it so badly. I had a student who, in the Alternatives to Violence Prevention program with Bernalillo County in Albuquerque, say to me in this boys group that I was working with, well, is it just damaged goods? And it took me a minute to figure out what he meant.
What did he mean?
He was asking me whether the world was fixable or not, whether it was just messed up and there was nothing that could be done. And what's great about this class is that we don't just look at the problems. We do look at, okay, so what can you do to change these things? What can you do in a passive way? Because there's ways that these problems are perpetuated in a passive way, not saying something when you hear a joke, etc., to what are ways that they're perpetuated in active ways. Assaulting someone, clear discrimination, etc. And then we look at passive and active ways of changing this environment. And what we come to is there's no passive way of changing things.
Right.
You have to act in order to change it. So that's very exciting for them to not only be able to put a label to what they're already experiencing and seeing in the world, and finally someone's talking about it, which is just such a relief for the students, especially that have been experiencing some of these things, but also to realize, oh, there's ways of changing it. I don't just have to try to get up on someone else to feel powerful. I can feel powerful by helping the entire community, which is definitely what we want to see.
One of the things I learned from talking to and from preparing for the conversation that we had a while back with Maria Hinojosa, the wonderful Latina journalist, was that discrimination against immigrants here in this country has been going on since before it was even a country. Mm-hmm. There was this quote from Benjamin Franklin where he was talking about how the Germans are stupid and incapable of enjoying freedom because they've never had it. And every generation you can find a quotation from somebody who's been immigrant bashing. Mm-hmm. And then the next generation, that same immigrant group and their children and grandchildren, bashes the next generation mm-hmm. of immigrants in mm-hmm. one way or another, unless mm-hmm. they don't, but many of them do. And this is the history of our nation for well over 200 years.
Well, and it's the cycle of violence. It's what we know, is that when somebody has experienced violence, unless there is some kind of intervention, the likelihood of them going on to perpetuate violence against another person is incredibly high. You know, I remember I grew up Jewish, and I remember growing up and finding out that there was some sort of conflict, I believe, with Jesse Jackson when I was young, and some comment about Jews. And I remember being utterly shocked that two oppressed groups would have any problems with each other
right.
instead of, you know, banding together to realize that they were experiencing similar things. But that is exactly what happened. So, you know, we see that a lot in every country.
Do you follow up with people? In other words, you do a group with these teenagers, and then do you find out what happens to them if some of them become really forces for positive change, or if they've changed psychologically?
The most that we see, the biggest changes that we can do is when we do the experiential classes, which is the class that you did, where you're actually in a scenario and you're seeing, what would I do in this scenario? Oh, I'm getting to witness my instincts. That might not be effective, my strategy that I've been doing. Why don't I try this new thing? And so we do get stories from anecdotes from teachers. What is most exciting for me is when we do a series of classes with Teen Court in Santa Fe, and one of the classes we did The Roots of Violence, then we did a class called What Would Provoke Me, that is what just it sounds like, of looking at what makes people angry and how they react and what the consequences might be of those actions. And we
even contemplating that question, what makes me mad,
uh-huh.
is quite fruitful. I remember doing that when I was in my 20s and mm-hmm. being surprised at what I wrote down.
Right, and it's really profound. And, you know, what's useful for the teenagers, especially at that age, is, you know, one of them, when we did that class, brought up her religious upbringing, and she wasn't really feeling in sync with what she and her family were doing. And what was really great is, you know, I got a chance to talk about, well, you can look at this a lot of ways. You can look at this around morals. You can look at this around belief systems and religion. And the way we're going to look at it today is just consequences. And look at, you know, teenagers can understand consequences really well. It's very immediate. And saying, okay, if you do this, your likelihood of going to jail is very high. If you do this, right, you may experience some social repercussions, but you're less likely to go to jail. You're less likely to get hurt. So helping them weigh those decisions. And then in the experiential 3-hour class where we enact these scenarios that they say, I've had trouble, I know that this has gotten me into trouble in the past, this is something that provokes me, they have the chance to experiment with, as I said, what they normally do. And we had, you know, we had these teenage boys who are saying these things that they know will get them in trouble, but they just can't help saying them. Or
like what?
One of them was, you know, just one of those, like, well, you're ugly, you know, you're stupid, these little ego, like, little things that, you know, if you ask them, it's like, well, what would you do if someone said that to you? Well, I'd hit them. Okay, well, and then you're gonna say that he picked the fight with you, or he, you know, he didn't pick the fight with you, you're the one that, you know, you could have walked away and you didn't. And we had one teenage girl in my last class who, it was very interesting for me. You know, they talk about bullying and how that's different with girls around social exclusion and that sort of thing rather than fists. And one of the things that she experienced is she wanted to have a character who was talking smack about her friend. And she had this person come up and he was saying, oh, your friend's a blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And she was like, well, I'm not like that. No, maybe she was having a bad day. Well, just because I hang out with her doesn't mean I'm like that. And, you know, and it was one of those things where I just was watching it happening as her coach, and then, you know, stopped it for a second and was like, what's going to happen when your friend finds out that you said this about her? You know, he's not saying this just recreationally. He's saying this because he wants to start trouble. And, you know, wouldn't a better response be to say, you know what, I don't want you saying that. She's my friend. Why are you saying that to me? You know I care about her. Don't talk to me like that.
Right.
And it was such a struggle for her to say that versus putting it off, again, with that the same system that we're talking about in the Roots of Violence class of putting it off onto someone else.
Right.
Saying, oh, you're ugly, you're weak, or, you know, she's not all that. You know, she thinks she is, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of just having the conversation, which, you know, we know, you know, from your class, it's so much harder to just set a boundary with someone sometimes than to delay it.
Was she able to do it?
She was. She was able to do it, and it was a huge revelation for her to think, like, oh, that's why, you know, because she was like, oh, you know, because oftentimes people think about girls being targeted by boys so much or by older men. You know, her biggest problem was girl-on-girl violence. And so for her, you know, it had just come out of nowhere, this girl-on-girl violence, instead of going, oh, maybe it's that I'm not addressing things the way I need to be, and yeah, it's escalating, and then once it gets back to me, there's nothing to do but to get into this physical confrontation, because I can't lie, you know, I can't, because that was another strategy she tried saying, is like, no, I didn't say that, and it was like, okay, well, what if you did? Because
right,
you've said you have. So it was a huge revelation for all of the students. One of the things that I loved best about this class is, you know, they're teen court kids. They're kids that are having trouble. And, you know, the first classes that we had, they had, like, their feet up on their chairs, and they were, you know, very clearly distancing themselves from the class. The last class of that series, after we'd done these role plays, I let them put the chairs however they want. We were sitting in the closest circle that everybody's knees were almost touching. And it was 5 or 6 people. So it was even close for me, actually. So it was just a really great testament. And, you know, the kids said, you know, one of my favorite and most troubled boys in that class said, you know, I'm glad we practiced that and not just talked about it, because this stuff comes up for me a lot. And usually I just fight. It was good to learn something else I could do.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
You're making me remember the 5th grade in which the most human cruelty I ever experienced in an ongoing way was with a 6th grader who just decided, because I was the new kid in the new school, to make my life miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, of course, in those days, no skills and no teaching and no awareness and no nothing. We just had nothing. And it was especially for, I mean, you're talking about kids who respond sometimes in violence and end up in teen court, but then there are people, many of us, who respond by shrinking like a little snail back
right
into their shell
right
and can't come out again for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's exciting. That population that you're describing is the population we've worked with for 10 years in Santa Fe. And, you know, we're still obviously very committed to those classes. That's what we do in our public classes quite a bit. And it's really exciting for me to work with both populations and say, look, there's no perfect way of doing this. These are, you know, if you go to one extreme or another, we're just looking for an effective response, which is frequently the middle ground.
Now, you have had some young people who have used their impact personal safety skills to really defend themselves,
mm-hmm,
you know, prevent kidnapping, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. We had an attempted kidnapping probably about a year or more plus ago, where the girl successfully defended herself. Well, she was, I believe, 8 years old at the time, which was very exciting. And we recently had 2 women in their 20s who, both while traveling, actually, one was on the beach with her friend, and her friend had a bag, and I think there were 5 of them. It was 2 women and 3 men. And actually, two men came up to try to get the bag. And unfortunately, you know, what we talk about in muggings and that sort of thing is just give up your possessions. It's not worth whatever struggle is there. And unfortunately, sometimes there is a physical aspect that comes into play, even though somebody is willing to be cooperative. And so everyone's ran in different directions that was in that group. The woman, our graduate, and her friend were still there, and it was her friend's bag that they were trying to grab. And our graduate said that she was carrying her shoes in her hand, and she said she started hitting one of the guys with her shoes who had come to her, and the other guy was with her friend. And she said that she was hitting him with her shoe and then realized that she had more effective skills than that and yelled and realized that she was silent the whole time and suddenly yelled. And she said she could, in that split second, see that he was about to leave, that just yelling, he was about to run away. And he didn't run away fast enough, and he was still assaulting her, so she struck him in the eye with an eye strike. And she said it was, her adrenaline management was so good, it was like total slow motion, that she could analyze this whole process. And she actually noticed in that moment as he was leaving that he had a knife in his belt. And he was running, and his friend went with him. And what was interesting about that is oftentimes people say to our graduates who have experienced an assault or an attempted assault, well, aren't you afraid? And she was like, no, I sent him running. Right. Why would I be afraid? He's the one that clearly wasn't prepared for what happened. I was absolutely prepared. He went running away.
Alina Scheim is the executive director of Impact Personal Safety, which is on the web at impactpersonalsafety.org. We have to go because we've got one more quick segment coming up, but you can go to Impact Personal Safety and find out about all the programs and classes and ways that you can get involved on that website. What is the phone number?
It's 992-8833.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Sure.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. I'm very happy to welcome to the show Miles Tucano and Katie Gross from the Youth Media Project. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so very much. We're excited to be here, Mary Charlotte.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So as Shayla Patton mentioned a couple of segments ago, you have a summer intensive coming up that starts on Monday.
Mm-hmm, exactly. This upcoming Monday from July 18th, and it's running for 2 weeks till the 29th.
And what happens in this? Who's it for, and what do you do?
So the summer intensive is for youth between the ages of 12 and 18, and we work with the Santa Fe Art Institute, two teachers who work in the education department there, and Miles and myself will be working with young people for these 2 weeks to develop audio pieces, and we work in many different art forms, including hip-hop, spoken word. We're including some photography work for these next 2 weeks as well. The culminating event will be audio slideshows and a presentation of their audio pieces for their parents and friends.
Exactly. And then those pieces, those either narratives or
spoken word
pieces,
music.
Whatever they really want to be doing, but something orally. Will be broadcast on one of the Audio Revolution broadcasts.
Which airs on KSFR.
Exactly.
Starting in September, right? September to May.
And when is it on KSFR?
Wednesday nights from 7 to 8 p.m.
Okay, that's right. Now, when you have a group, let's say you've got some 12-year-olds who come to this, and they've never told or written their own story or their own poetry or anything like that before, how do you get them started?
Well, luckily we have some seasoned professionals. Lisa Donahue at Santa Fe Art Institute is a spoken word artist, poet. So she has developed many exercises, writing exercises, to get them thinking about themselves. And we will be presenting a media literacy presentation as well to get them thinking about how media is constructed and how important their voice is in the broader spectrum. So we have a lot of small activities that we do in the first few days of the intensive leading up to the their own personal pieces.
Including a trip to the Mountain Center, the Santa Fe Mountain Center.
Ah, very
interesting. Which is really exciting for us. It's a new development for the summer intensive, this is the fourth summer intensive we've done. And this is the first time we're going to be going there. And so they're going to be doing team activity building exercises as well as leadership building exercises. And so hopefully we're going to be getting them really comfortable to be able to kind of share their stories with each other.
Mm-hmm. And working in small groups and really getting the feedback of their peers as well as us who will mm-hmm. right. be encouraging them. And
the grown-ups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the grown-ups. Mm-hmm.
The Mountain Center does incredible work, and really even the shyest kids or the most withdrawn kids get brought out by having to participate in these shared activities, mm-hmm. which involve ropes and climbing and things like that. It's all safe, but it's still challenging.
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting them out of their comfort zone will be a key part of the intensive, but in a safe way, like you said.
We're also really excited about using or collaborating with the Mountain Center, because the theme of this year's summer intensive is hopes, dreams, and aspirations. And so a big part of reaching your dreams is kind of going through struggles and overcoming fears, and to be able to get to your idea of what you want the world to look like.
Yep. Now, so far, do you have kids of all these ages? I mean, 12 to 18, that's really kind of a big developmental difference.
It is. I don't actually know what the exact ages of the participants are. I think we have 7 that are signed up so far.
And you can still take a few more.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can sign up by calling the Santa Fe Art Institute at 424-5050. What are some of the most memorable experiences that you had in past summer intensives with some of these young people?
Well, this is actually both of our first summer intensives.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
You've been doing this. You've been doing youth media for a while, though, Miles, haven't you?
I'm actually just coming up on my first year.
Oh,
I came
okay.
in right after their last summer intensive.
Excellent.
And so I'm really excited to be able to use all of this information that I've, and all this growth that I've had from this past year, and be able to pass that on in this very specific and focused way.
Do you see young people thinking more seriously about careers in media?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that is our primary goal, but definitely to help them find their voice and to learn more about media. It's kind of a two-tiered project to get them to think more about the media that they see every day, how to deconstruct media, as well as to find their own voice and their own place in media making as well. And if they continue in media making, we would love that. We actually really do encourage them to continue on with us during the school year to be part of our production team for our Auto Revolution show that is broadcast twice a month. And yeah, we would love to encourage, spark that creativity and that passion to continue forward with media making. But it's also just to help them become more comfortable in communicating their ideas and learning about their own stories and how their stories relate to other people and larger issues.
And when you talk about deconstructing the media, it's things like looking at how people are trying to get into your mind in order to sell you food that's bad for you, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's exactly that, but it's also storytelling. We think of media as storytelling and kind of whose stories are being told as well as whose stories aren't being told. And so that's exactly kind of what we're talking about as well.
Yeah, the text and subtext, you know, the what is hidden as well as what is spoken out loud.
So the radio show that airs on Wednesday nights is called Audio Revolution. What do you mean by that?
Well, we view our work as a channel for social change. And really, Audio Revolution points to the platform that we give for young people to share their ideas and their stories in the hopes of creating social change or being more engaged in the community.
And I think as Gil Scott Heron said, the revolution will not be televised. But he didn't say it won't be aired.
It'll be aired on KSFR.
Exactly.
Miles Tucano and Katie Gross are with the Youth Media Project. They are on the web at youthmediaproject.org. And once again, the 4th annual summer intensive is at the Santa Fe Art Institute starting on Monday. So you can call, I guess, today or tomorrow, 424-5050 in the 505 area code. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.